support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm Lori McCandish King, reporting from Arnold, California. I'm talking today with Nate Randall, proprietor and distiller at Hinterhouse Distilleries here in Calaveras County. Welcome, Nate.
Thanks, Lori. I appreciate it.
Well, tell me a little bit about the town of Arnold and Calaveras County.
Sure. So Arnold is a small town in the Sierra up here off Highway 4. It's primarily a vacation community that was built up mostly in the 1960s. It's got beautiful cabins and a ton of recreation. There's ski slopes nearby, hiking, mountain biking, all sorts of wonderful outdoor activities to do. The town is small. I believe there's only 4,000 or 6,000 permanent residents, maybe even less. But then it swells on the weekends and the holidays as visitors come in. So it's an amazing place to live. We absolutely love being here, and we're right at the gateway to Big Trees State Park, which has got the giant sequoia and all of the amazingness and nature that that provides.
What got you interested in opening a distillery?
Yeah, so it's a growing industry. There aren't many craft distilleries when you compare them to breweries and wineries around the country and certainly in California. So we felt there was a kind of exciting different thing there. We've always been spirits fans. And we discovered several years back a German traditional liqueur in Germany. My brother lives there. And that really gave me the bug to try to figure out how to make it. And it just kind of spiraled out of control. And eventually I convinced my wife, Bonnie, that this could be a fun thing to do and a thing that could put food on the table and pay our bills. And so we started down the path, and it's been a several-year process so far to get to this point. But we're really enjoying it, and we feel it adds something great to the county and to the general region.
So that liqueur I tasted yesterday, and it was fabulous. It has tons of botanicals in it, and I think I remember that some of those are local. Tell me that story.
Yeah, absolutely. So really taking a step back, everything we do, we try to have some sort of local connection. There are amazing resources in California, certainly Northern California, and even more so in Calaveras County where we're at. So each thing we do, we try to say, what can we do as close to home as possible? So herbs and botanicals are one thing. If we're going to be using herbs and botanicals, for instance, in our gin, we want to try to use things that are native to our area, just to reflect the terroir of where we are. I think terroir and spirits is a bit of a new concept. Spirits traditionally have been made using commodity grains, largely farmed in the Midwest on huge factories, and there's a lot of discovery in that space. So the malted barley we use all come from small local California farms. Many of the botanicals we use are as local as we can get them. We use wine and many of our spirits as the base, and obviously California has a bunch of great wine and grape-growing regions. So really everything we're doing, we're trying to make it as local as possible. And I think that's what people have gravitated towards in the food culture, certainly the wine culture, beer. People want something that's unique to the place they're visiting or the place they live. So that's what we're trying to do here.
And tell me a little bit about the gin that you distill here. What goes into that?
Yeah, so the gin is fascinating. All of our clear-based spirits, so whether it's vodka, gin, or liqueurs, they all start from wine. So a lot of people don't know that you can make spirits out of wine, but obviously brandy is made out of wine. So we start with a wine base, then we distill it. Then we vapor infuse it, it's called, and we're using botanicals that are native to the Sierra Nevada mountains. So we don't have some things that are fairly common in gin, like coriander or things like that, because they don't grow here. We do have juniper, which is the base of gin. All gin has to have juniper. And then we have things like gooseberries, ginger root, elderflowers, things that grow up here. So it's definitely a unique gin. The grape base from the wine gives it kind of a sweet, soft mouthfeel. and the botanicals give it almost a citrusy floral quality. So it's a really nice product. We enjoy it a lot, and it's different than things you can get on the grocery store shelves, which is another thing we're kind of shooting for.
What are some of the botanicals that are in the Anorak liqueur?
Oh man, this is a good test. So there's 23 herbs and botanicals in there. We've got all of the Italian herbs, so things like basil, oregano, thyme, stuff like that. We've got cinnamon, star anise. There is some other bitter components like orange peels and angelica root and some of those things. So it's a complex thing, and it took me probably 18 to 24 months of constant R&D to get that product to a place where we now really like the flavor. As you can imagine, trying to balance 23 herbs and botanicals and figure out what tastes good and what's impacting which piece of the flavor and smell is a bit of a challenge. So it's a lot of fun though, and it's really interesting to watch patrons taste it, because each person picks out a different set of botanicals. And it's been really fascinating actually seeing culturally some of the trends. So for instance, when we've had Indian folks in here, they've picked up some of the more aromatic spices that they're used to in their cooking, turmeric, bay leaf, some of that stuff. So it's really fascinating.
And Bonnie said that there are some terrific cocktails you can make with that too. Can you tell me about some of those?
Yeah, absolutely. It's great just as an after-dinner sipper. It's a digestif, so it has chamomile and turmeric and some of those things that settle your stomach. And traditionally, that's what it's used for in Germany, is after a big meal, it settles your stomach. So it's kind of a health food, really.
That's what you like to tell people.
Exactly. But it makes a great addition to things like an old-fashioned and a replacement for bitters. So it adds a little bit of sweetness and a little bit more character than a bitters would. It's also wonderful in like a hot toddy or something like that, just sitting around the campfire or sitting around the hearth at home. So it's been a lot of fun to see what people do with it. We've had people use it in baking because it does have a lot of baking spices. So as an ingredient in things like brownies and stuff like that. And it's been really interesting to see what folks have done with it.
And you make whiskey here too.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually make several different kinds of whiskey. Currently, the only one we have available, because whiskey takes time, so as a new distiller, it's a bit of a waiting game. But the one we have available now is a bourbon whiskey, and it's a lot of fun because, again, in the sense of working local and trying to be as close to home as possible, Murphy's in Calaveras County, which is near us, has an amazing wine scene and dozens of great wineries. So right in our backyard, we've got this stuff. And what we do that's a little bit unique is we take our bourbon and then we transfer it into wine barrels for the last several weeks of its life. It's called finishing in the industry. So we finish the whiskey in wine barrels. And the really fun thing for us has been we change our whiskey mash bill. So that's one variable, but then we also feature a different winery and a different variety of wine with each batch. So each batch will change. The flavor profile won't be the same every single batch. And the fun thing is our consumers and the people who've come in and that are really into it, they'll buy, let's say, batch 6, and they know that it's a certain winery and a certain varietal, and then they'll go down to that winery and buy that bottle of wine and see if they can trace the lineage in the whiskey at all. We're super passionate about partnerships and working local and all of that stuff, which I'm sure you hear. But the other thing, we have something called American single malt whiskey, which is a bit of a new category in the United States. And that has been put down and is aging. In that, we're working with local, small Northern California farms to get the barley. And so that's really interesting because we get to see the farms, we get to see how it's farmed, there are no chemicals used, and it really does allow a much richer flavor profile than the barleys that are used in most of the large factory whiskey production. And then we have rye that we're working on and a bunch of stuff. So whiskey's a fun thing that we're really passionate about. It just takes time. So we'll be there eventually where we have some of these products on the shelves.
How long do you need?
Yeah, well, we're thinking some of our first products in the rye and American single malt categories will be in the next, let's say, 18 to 24 months. But then over time, I mean, whiskey is a long, long game. There are Scotch whiskeys that are 40 years old. So over time, I would love to have stuff that we've put down, and who knows when we decide to put it out. So my hope is that it gets older and more interesting, and we're able to do some really fun stuff and take our patrons along with us on the ride. So my prior life, I was an executive at Tesla Motors during the startup years. So, you know, when I started there were about 400 employees, and when I left, there were 13,000 in 4 years. So some sort of catastrophic growth, if you will. It's been an amazing ride. I really enjoyed working there, and a lot of the things I learned there, I'm able to apply here. The excitement, the innovation, thinking outside the box, moving quickly, doing things on a shoestring budget. We don't have big investors or anything like that. It's just my wife and I and a little bit of our life savings that we put into this. So much like Tesla, where people think this great, huge, successful company must have had so much money just going around everywhere, but we had to figure out how to do things on a no budget kind of scenario. So that creates innovation and excitement, and we've put some of that into what we're doing here, which has been a lot of fun. And both my wife and I enjoy what we're doing. We had a conversation this morning about, are we liking that we started this business? Because you never know when you get into the heat of it what it's really going to be like. And we're both really enjoying our day to day. And so that's the number one is we like what we're doing.
And speaking of Tesla, it feels pretty remote here in Calaveras County, but you have charging stations here, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really interesting, the rural areas, especially of California, but really, I feel like around the entire country, have really come a long ways, and the globalization of technology has impacted everywhere. So, you know, we've got great internet speeds, in fact, faster than when we lived in the Bay Area or Seattle, which is interesting. But we've got great internet speeds. We've got, you know, charging stations everywhere. Some of the most amazing restaurants I've ever had in my life are in Arnold, believe it or not. So it's an amazing place and a real up-and-coming place, and much easier to get to than some of the other travel destinations near the Bay.
Can you tell us some of your favorite restaurants?
Yeah, absolutely. So for the first half of the day, I would say Bistro Espresso is hard to miss. Bristol's is a great breakfast place. Bring your newspaper. It's going to take some time, but you're going to get a real home-cooked meal. And then Dogwood for dinner is unbelievable and out of sight. It's one of the best restaurants I've ever been to, and I've been fortunate to be at many great restaurants over my life, and this one's at the top of the list for me.
Wow, that's terrific, and it's right here at home.
Yeah.
So, Nate, if I want to come up here, spend a weekend, of course I'm coming here to Hinter House, but what else?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, make your way up Highway 4. I think you've got to stop in Murphy's, which is just before Arnold. See all the wineries and shops and all of that. That's a great day trip. And then closer up here to Arnold, obviously we're here, and there are several other great places to stop. Big Trees State Park is just 5 minutes up the road from us, which is an amazing thing to see. If you haven't seen the giant sequoia, it really can be life-changing. And then now we're coming to wintertime, so 20, 30 minutes up the road from here, you're going to have snowshoeing adventures, cross-country skiing, regular downhill skiing, or just sledding and having all that kind of fun. So there's no shortage of things to do for sure.
And then in the summer, there are lakes up here. There's all kinds of summer recreation too.
Yeah, absolutely. You got lakes, fishing, rivers, hiking. We're in the mountains, so there's amazing views everywhere you look, and tons of wildlife. I mean, you're likely to see deer, of course, but you could see bears and all that fun stuff. So it's there's no shortage of great outdoor activities in the area.
All right, I'm getting to it. Thank you so much, Nate. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
I'm
support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter, down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives. And Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.